Welcome to A World Powerfully Transformed, a new podcast from Unity on Cape Cod. We are creating community, celebrating love, and transforming lives. In this special series, we will bring you exciting, positive spiritual teachings, as well as thought-provoking interviews with guests from a diverse spectrum of the greater community. Now let us join Reverend Tony for this week's presentation.
Welcome to the Unity on Cape Cod podcast. I'm Reverend Tony Cryer, the spiritual leader here at Unity on Cape Cod. We are part of Unity Worldwide Ministries, which has a vision of a world powerfully transformed by the growing movement of our shared spiritual awakening. Each week, I will be bringing you special guests, and we'll be talking about current issues and topics that are impacting our lives and how we can take a spiritual approach to transforming our world. So welcome. Come on in. Welcome back, everyone, to A World Powerfully Transformed. Today we have a special guest, Reverend Larry Brown, who's an interfaith minister and somewhat of a local legend around here, around Cape Cod. He was history teacher for over 27 years at Cape Cod Academy and is still teaching today at the Cape Cod Community College School for Lifelong Learning. Welcome, Larry.
Thank you. Thank you for having me back.
So grateful that you're here today. We're going to be talking about a spiritual approach to peace on earth. And I think we'll get some great insights as to how we can proceed in these times where there's so much conflict around the world. To start out, Larry, I'd love to share with our audience the Unity Worldwide Statement of Peace. In this now moment, we urge all nations and their leaders and their people to turn to God by whatever the name for guidance during these challenging times and pursue peace, not war. For this is what honors the God of all our faith traditions. For unity stands for peace in our lifetime. So Larry, I know many of us stand by this, that peace is the only way. And yet war seems to be proliferating and continuing in our world. Is there any hope that a spiritual revolution can occur to bring about peace in our time?
I think we have to act as though there is.
Wow.
Okay, because, we look at history. We've been doing this for a long time. We've had prophets and spiritual teachers who have tried to straighten us out for a long, long time, and we're still at it.
Mm-hmm.
And I worry that in my old age here, that what's happening in our own country and around the world, I think every once in a while, at least portions of the human race go crazy and act crazy. And I worry that we're headed for one of those. I think part of the dynamic, before we even talk about war, is just look at the rhetoric that we're used to in our political discourse and social discourse in this country. I think there's one of the dynamics here, and it's kind of a narcissistic dynamic, is the more wicked you can imagine your opponents, the more righteous you get to feel in opposing them.
Mm-hmm.
There's a feedback loop here. But for you to get the righteous kick that makes this almost in a weird sort of way an extension of the entertainment industry, to take politics away from being issues of policy disagreements and turn them into culture wars, where the people you oppose are not just wrong, they're wicked people. And that makes you righteous in opposing them, and that's the emotional payoff of going about it this way. That's going to lead to violence. There's no other place for it to go in the end. Than that. And we're setting ourselves up for it.
So this is what I'm hoping to give our audience today is some hope that we can bring a spiritual approach into the conversation. I know we have people like Marianne Williamson running for president who's offering a different approach. And, you know, she just gets ignored by a majority of the people out there, the media. Like you said, it's not fashionable. It's not. It doesn't seem to be entertaining to offer a solution these days. How do you think we can? I want to say something. How do you think we can effectively insert the message of oneness into this equation?
I think we need to defer the policy arguments first, and start to try to undo this righteousness, emotional, what I call toxic righteousness.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that each person has to do on their own, that when they catch themselves feeding into this dynamic, that they see it for that, that the more wicked you can imagine your opponents, the more righteous you get to feel in opposing them. Because if we stop seeing each other as human beings, then if we're off to the races, and we're going to do what we've always been doing, and you won't get the change that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I think most spiritual teachers have taught us that we need to be tuned to the frequency of other people's suffering.
Wow. Yeah. Very Buddhist.
We need to be aware, looking for it, which is unpleasant and difficult emotionally and tiresome to do. It's a spiritual discipline to be tuned to the suffering of other people, to look for the tear sliding down the cheek turned away from you.
Do you think that in this day and age, we're actually conditioned to take some kind of enjoyment out of other people's suffering? Like we're winning instead of having compassion for them?
Well, I've seen bumper stickers that say Trump 2024, make the Democrats cry again.
Oh, yeah.
Make the Democrats cry again. At the risk of getting partisan, I don't want to go that way with it. But that has not been traditionally one of the political objectives of either party in this country. If you're voting for candidates, there are policies that you want to see go into effect. There's things that you want to see your country do together. But to make other people cry as a political objective is kind of a warning shot when you see people talking and thinking that way. And there has to be some, before you can talk about reconciliation, the first thing is simply to be willing to look at other people as like human beings.
Yes.
Just to see them. And I would tell my students sometimes that this thing about being tuned to the frequency of other people's suffering, that if you don't look, you won't see. If you don't see, you won't feel. And if you don't feel, you won't act. And if you don't act, nothing will change.
Wow.
So that first step in political spirituality, which almost sounds like an oxymoron these days, is kind of a discipline that when you wake up in the morning, you resolve that I'm going to go out in the world today and greet every person I see with a gentle benevolence to wish them well.
Yes.
What Jim Kirshner, when he shares a Buddhist prayer, that all beings be well and happy and free from suffering, that we're ready to wish that for everybody. And I get feedback mail from the columns I write, and sometimes from liberals, I get a complaint that, come on, you're offering some kind of inequality, that what we're doing and what they're doing is the same thing. And we're so tribalized now that we're only interested in compassion for the people with whom we agree.
Right, yeah. That righteous indignation symptomatic of it, both sides. If you're taking sides, both sides of the
issue. At the arguments happening right now in this country about people who are sympathetic to the Palestinians and people who are sympathetic to Israelis, and how difficult it is since we tribalize so quickly. We're a self-polarizing society. an issue comes up and we immediately say, how can I use this as ammunition for the culture wars I'm fighting with these other people? And so here's a start to see the humanity of both sides. And I used to teach this because I taught geography for 34 years. And when I got to the Middle East and got to the, you know, to the creation of Israel, to tell the kids, there's two stories, and either one of these, both of these, should make you cry. The tragedy of the history here is that people will only cry for one and will harden their hearts to the suffering of the other.
Yes.
And as long as that persists, the violence will persist, the death will persist. And you know, look at what's happening in Gaza right now and ask yourself how many orphans are being made right now who will grow up determined as soon as they can to get themselves a weapon and avenge the deaths of their parents, the loss of their property. And it'll all happen again.
Yeah.
It's not a solution to anything.
I totally agree with you, Larry.
And I'm wondering what would have happened if instead of aerial bombardment, the Israeli army had come in units with loudspeakers and said, we want all civilians to take protection behind our ranks as we advance. If you would be so kind as to tell us where we could find Hamas, that's why we're here. We'd like to finish that. But we have no interest in harming any of you, and we will protect you as best you can. And we can do that better if you can help us find Hamas. With no aerial bombardment at all. It's possible that the casualties on the Israeli side would be a bit higher than they're going to be, but it would have been a transformatively different event.
Sure. I would say we forgive and want to come to an agreement somehow of how we can live together. Yeah. This is what you're proposing is a very human solution to me. It's still not going far enough for me as a spiritual solution.
See, I think the weakness of Williamson is that if you're going to run for president of the United States, you also need to be a policy wonk. You also need to be able to be knowledgeable and all of that.
Believe me, and she is very, very.
Well, I haven't heard her recently since 4 years ago in the last cycle of debate, so I'll be curious to see what she comes up with.
Oh, yeah, you should check that out. For me, it's almost too much policy. It would be really, I think, more palatable for you. For me, you know, we can't pray for one person and not the other. I absolutely have been praying so much for both the Israelis and the Palestinians, but for everyone to have a shift in consciousness away from war to peace, to realize it's just a cycle that feeds on itself and will continue. I met a wonderful person online through her writing. I haven't met in person, but I'd love to offer this prayer from a rabbi because there's something that's been going on is for a long time, as you know, governments or people using religion as a justification for war and fighting. And this is a rabbi that does not want war. And I would like to offer her a poem here today. This is from Rabbi Sheila Weinberg of the Jewish community of Amherst, Massachusetts. Praying together, two peoples, one land, three faiths, one root, one earth, one mother, one sky, one beginning, one future, one destiny, one God. We pray to you, grant us a vision of unity. May we see the many in the one and the one in the many. May you, life of all worlds, source of all amazing differences, help us see clearly. Guide us gently and firmly toward each other, toward peace. Amen.
How recent is that?
Very recent.
Yeah.
Just came out.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. This is partly in response to the violence in the Middle East right now.
I'm a spiritual guy, and I may be disappointing you by sort of the practical turn that I find myself coming back to. I think of peace as the collective gentleness of people.
Yes.
It's the collective gentleness of people, which means that one by one by one by one, before we can get to policy, it's we can't ask the world to change if we're not willing to change ourselves first.
Yes.
To gentle ourselves.
Yes.
First. And if that's and it's hard because some people are really annoying. so it can't be based on this love can't be based on desire.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be based on policy, on a decision, a conscious decision, and it's a spiritual discipline, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think for a lot of people, if you hold that discipline out, they say, well, you know what? I think the toxic righteousness is a lot more fun. I think I'm going to go that way.
That's what I was saying.
Yeah, and I'll feel completely religious.
Right.
While doing it. I'm working on a column, and I was reminded of a line from a letter that one of the French crusader, said an enthusiastic letter back to his wife from the siege of Jerusalem during the Crusades. He said, "We waded in blood up to our knees. Praise be to God. Up to our knees. Praise be to God."
Wow.
That's the bewitchment that so often spiritual attempts to solve the problem of violence wind up contributing to the violence instead, because we convince ourselves so easily that we have the blessing of God to do what we're doing. And once we have that blessing, then any means necessary.
Right. That's
the dynamic that we have to resist because it's so old.
That's been the historic justification for war. And I feel like it's time to take back our spirituality, to separate the warmongers, from the spiritual people. And not in truth, because we still are one, but in what you call policy or action, we cannot justify, because every spiritual path, every religion that I've ever been a part of or studied or looked at has love and compassion and accepting your neighbor as yourself at its core. And to take that as a justification for killing, it can no longer be tolerated by intelligent beings.
Well, the other part that we should consider too is that as our technological powers increase, if our moral development doesn't increase apace, the punishments that will fall on us for our failures will become more and more extreme and more violent. Our problem isn't our freedom, our personal freedom. It's our increasing inability to live with the consequences of what we're doing with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll offer, because a number of people have said, I've lost friends over the politics since 2016. People I can't talk to anymore.
Mm-hmm.
What do I do? And I'll throw out two questions that you can use when talking to people with whom you've been fundamentally in disagreement. The Interfaith Coalition actually did an event years ago called Healing the Body Politic. We did this after the Al Gore, George Bush Jr. election.
Mm-hmm.
And we filled an auditorium over at the college with folks, and we broke them up into small groups, and different pastors moderated discussions in various pockets of the room. Question one, what is it about people like me that I wish people like you understood? Where do you feel that the people that disagree with you have not seen you or misunderstood you? Tell them.
Great question.
Tell them. And we did that for like 25 minutes and back and forth, both sides. What is it about people like me that I worry that people like you don't understand? Question two, what are you afraid will happen if people like me win the next election? Articulate that. What are you afraid will happen? Put it out there. I'd love to tell you that the thing ended in a group hug, and it didn't. What it did do, and people were very articulate about that, is that it opened their eyes to the distances that had been, that it opened between themselves and their neighbors, and it offered them some strategies to try to close those a bit. I took a motorcycle ride out in the country a couple of years ago, and I got a flat tire, and I came whoop into some guy's driveway, and he wandered out. And he said, look, would it make your life any easier if I took you home so you could get your truck and come back to pick up the bike? And I said, well, it's a long way. I live on Cape Cod. I'm on the other side of the bridge. And he said, I'm retired. I got nothing to do. But he said, my night vision isn't so hot. So if you want to do it, we should leave now. So we're driving along. And I don't know whether liberals give off pheromones or what, but all of a sudden he turned and he said, you know, you do know I'm a Trump guy, right? And I said, look, we don't need to get into politics at all. You're being really kind to me. And he said, no, we can get into it. And he said, if you tick me off, I'll just throw you out. and we had a great time because we saw each other as human beings.
Yes.
And I think if you know enough about someone's history, how they were raised, who their teachers were, what kinds of things happened to them when they were growing up and being formed, you can fairly well predict probably what religions they'll be attracted to and what political movements they'll want to join. So it's backstory first. If you want to find a way to peace with people with whom you disagree, then you have to take out some time to sit together and go back and ask them, about that. Who were your teachers? What were the lessons that you learned as you grew up? Because once you know those things, you can kind of understand why they gravitate toward the candidates they gravitate to. And I think the way to peace in some ways is changing our habits, changing our interpersonal habits in the way we greet people and see people and deal with people.
Yeah, I agree. And
our motivation for doing that is spiritual. But just telling people that they, put down your sword, Peter, he who lives by the sword dies by the sword. We've been saying that. And our ancestors, like us, have been saying that for a long, long time.
And nobody puts down their swords.
And nobody puts down their sword yet. So obviously we have to do this differently than people have done it in the past. And what I would offer on almost a practical level is that peace is a habit.
Yes.
It's a habit. It's a way of interacting with other people gently and compassionately and patiently. And lovingly. And our motives for doing those things are spiritual. And we don't even have to have the same religion to find the motivation, because as you pointed out, every spiritual teacher is offering the same injunction, same advice.
Absolutely. I'd like to offer something at this juncture, which comes from Ernest Holmes, who's a great New Thought teacher. He's the founder of Science of Mind. Those churches are now called CSL, Centers for Spiritual Living. And I think you're heading in this direction. That's why I wanted to offer this at this point. Plus, we're running out of time. So I'd like to just kind of slowly bring this to a close by offering this thought. I know there is but one mind, which is the mind of God, in which all people live and move and have their being. I know there is a divine pattern for humanity, and within this pattern, there is infinite harmony, peace, cooperation, unity, and mutual helpfulness. I know that the mind of humanity, being one with the mind of God, shall discover the method, the way, and the means best fitted to permit the flow of divine love between individuals and nations. Thus, harmony, peace, cooperation, unity, and mutual helpfulness will be experienced by all. So, my only final question to you, Larry, is, where we started, we have to act, you said, as though it's possible to find this divine pattern and the means best fitted, that will permit peace on earth. And starting individually with those around us. Is there hope for humanity at this time?
Yeah. I think there, again, I think we have to act as though there is.
Yeah.
Which is maybe, you know, getting kind of cutesy with you. And I'm not, I don't
not
mean,
at all.
And I don't mean to be. We have to act as though there is. I was asked by a Unitarian church a year or so ago to talk to them about how do we keep hope.
Yes.
And somebody likened our situation to being on the decks of the Titanic and, you know, the orchestra playing. And it seems to me that if you knew how to play the violin and you were on the decks of the Titanic, what better thing for you to do than to play your instrument as beautifully and as powerfully as you could for as long as you could? Because in the end, we're all on the decks of the Titanic. None of us is going to get out of this alive. There's a line in Hindu scripture that where God says to us, you have a right to the work, but the results belong to me. And I think, so I'm trying to remember who it was recently that said that you pray as if everything depended on God and you act as if everything depended on you.
Mm.
And you act as though everything depended on you. And so I do think there's hope. And we have to act as though there is,
mm-hmm.
Anyway, to act lovingly. The Pilgrim Congregation in 1630, Reverend Winthrop said to them during a long sermon, to love and live beloved is the soul's paradise on earth and in heaven.
Beautiful.
To love and live beloved is the soul's paradise on earth and in heaven. And the great mystery of my life is that right next to the life we're living, maybe better inside the life we've been living, is this sweeter, more illumined life. And why we don't choose that life instead of the one we've been living has been the great mystery of my life. But the choice to do so is always in front of us.
Yes.
Every day, every opportunity, every conversation, it's always in front of us.
Yes, absolutely. And I like what you said about having those tough conversations. There's a whole movement within Unity to have those conversations with your congregants and with the people in your community. We have a lot of varying degrees of worldview and disagreements about what we should do in the world. But we all agree on where we're headed spiritually.
Yeah.
And that creates an energy. I think it falls into the pattern of cooperation.
It's an opportunity.
Yeah. Seeing the mutual divinity in each person. This is something that I feel that what you were talking about is very important to have a forum for those conversations.
Yeah. I've asked congregations often at the very beginning when I get up, how many of you have ever had a political argument with someone that ended with the other guy bursting into tears and saying, my God, how could I have been so wrong for so long?
Right.
And everybody laughs. And I go, no, I'm serious. Stick your hand up if that's ever happened to you. And there's no hands up. So why are we doing it? Why are we having these conversations if we already know in advance where they're headed? From a spiritual point of view, the reason we talk to other people is so we can know them.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason we know them is so we can love them.
Yes.
From a spiritual point of view, that's why we talk to each other.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm committed to bringing that into society wherever I can. Larry, I just want to thank you so much for being here today to offer some of your wisdom and your passion for bringing peace.
Well, thank you for having me. It's always fun doing these things with you. You're good company.
Thank you so much. I ran across something. I'd like to end with this. I ran across it this morning, just after my meditation this morning. And it's a prayer for peace, but it's also a direction. I would like to read it now as an ending here. Peacemaking doesn't mean passivity. It is the act of interrupting injustice without mirroring injustice. It is the act of disarming evil without destroying the evildoer. It is the act of finding a third way. that is neither fight nor flight, but the careful, arduous pursuit of reconciliation and justice. It is about a revolution of love that is big enough to set both the oppressed and the oppressors free. And with that, I'd like to thank everyone for joining us this morning with Reverend Larry Brown. And we will be back very soon with another edition of A World Powerfully Transformed.
Thank you, each and every one, for tuning in to this special edition of A World Powerfully Transformed, a Unity on Cape Cod podcast. If you would like to support this program or find out more about Unity on Cape Cod and our Sunday services, please visit our website, unityoncapecod.org, or stop by our spiritual center at 147 Walton Ave in Hyannis, Mass. We would love to get to know you. Be blessed and remember to be a blessing. This podcast was made possible in part through a grant from Unity Worldwide Ministries and the Templeton Foundation.